Good morning and welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, the co-chairman of the IBM Endowment for the Business of Government. We created the endowment in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. Find out more about the endowment by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our conversation this morning is with Dr. Sherry Heller. Sherry is the Commissioner of the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Good morning, Sherry.
Hi.
And joining us in our conversation is Therese Moore. Good morning, Therese.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, Sherry, could you give us an overview of the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement?
There's about 200 staff here in Washington, and then additional staff that aren't directly in the Office of Child Support Enforcement, but they're in our 10 regional HHS offices. And they help us because most of our program is run through state and county agencies. So a lot of what we do is try to provide incentives and persuasion and technical assistance and help to the people on the front lines in state and local government.
How would you characterize their mission?
It used to be just about money. I mean, that's primarily how people think of us, as a sort of a collection agency for people who had children out of wedlock or who got divorced, and now the courts have decided that they owe money to the partner who's raising the children so that the children have the resources they need. And it was all about collecting the money and getting the money to the kids. And while that's still the primary mission, I think we are trying to bring more of a sense of justice to the office so that it's not just about money, so that absent dads, for example, who pay their bills and pay their child support and don't get access to their children feel like the system of justice works for them, too. And the people raising the kids who feel like the absent parent ran off and is hiding and isn't doing their fair share as a parent, they feel they can get a sense of justice also.
What are the skills of the 200 people? As you described this, I imagine so many very different parts.
They vary considerably. We have a lot of the staff who are mainly technical, automation people, because so much of the work we do, as I'm sure we'll talk about later, is highly, highly automated. And they provide a lot of technical assistance to state and local government folks who are trying to automate their child support systems. Other people are just highly skilled at getting through to and speaking clearly about bureaucratic stuff to very angry, upset people. And by the time people get to us, they're often very frustrated and they feel like they haven't been given a sense of justice. And so we have some people who are just very skilled at settling people down and getting them to focus on what can actually be done to help the justice system work better for them. So it varies a lot between technical knowledge, interpersonal skills, policymaking skills, teaching skills, because we do a lot of teaching of our partners in state and local government.
Sherry, what are your roles and responsibilities as commissioner?
I think of myself primarily as an inspiring leader. That's how I want to be viewed, at least. I give people a sense that seemingly insoluble problems can be solved, a clarity of mission. When there's 17 emails in your inbox and 10 angry customers, what do you do first? Do you pay attention to the mom who's in poverty and is most desperate for the $100 she's owed? Or do you pay attention to the $500,000 a year doctor who ran out of state to avoid his obligations? Do you pay attention to the big money first or to the most in need first? Those are very tough choices, and public servants have a hard time making them confidently. I think my role is to have absolute clarity of message so people know what to pay attention to.
That's a very challenging role. What in your background has prepared you for it?
Well, there's a lot of things. I've spent over 20 years in state and local government. This job is actually my first term as a Fed. I worked in a county courthouse for many years. And in my role as county administrator, I manage things as diverse as the prison warden reported to me, the 911 center, the tax assessment office, the juvenile detention center, the county nursing home, quite a lot of variety there. In state government, I worked for two different governors, and I also worked for the leader of the state Senate. So I think I have some pretty practical knowledge of what what it takes to get people to change the way they do things.
Was there any one experience that prepared you best for this job?
I think probably the best preparation I had was working for Governor Ridge. I worked for Tom Ridge in Pennsylvania, and I managed welfare reform there. That was a revolution in how systems and financing streams and the tools of government could be changed to change individual human beings' decision about how they spent their time. Should I work or stay home with my kid? How do you move a big government system to change one person's decision about going to work? And so that means when I came to Washington and had to deal with 54 different states and jurisdictions, you know, how do I get Kansas to do something more like Pennsylvania does? Or how do I respect California's way of doing things and the fact that they're very different from Nevada and still help a mom living in Nevada and the dads in California, and how do I get the money there? So the idea of learning how to take big, blunt tools and affect individual decisions that I learned doing welfare reform for Governor Ridge has helped me be prepared, I think.
Well, let's continue down this avenue. I mean, could you do a little more comparing and contrasting the state perspective and, say, the federal perspective, just in terms of people and management styles and those kind of things?
Well, you know, when you're in county government, you can always say to your constituent who you run into in the grocery store that state people made me do it that way. And when you're in the state capitol, you can always shrug and say to the Associated Press reporter or the local legislator, "Oh, the feds made me do it that way." Now that you're in federal government, you actually the buck stops here. They're asking for help, and you have to provide it to them. You can't blame it on somebody else. So that's one big difference. I would say that that financial incentives matter a lot more in the federal government. A lot of how you get things done is to provide financial incentives for state and local governments to take advantage of new opportunities. But ultimately, I don't think it's that different. Dealing with 67 counties when I sat in the state capitol is not all that different than sitting in Washington and dealing with 54 states and territories. I think it comes down to financial incentives on the one hand and clear message and inspiration, helping people have confidence that their efforts are going to pay off.
Well, let me ask you about two specific things in that. How about in terms of the speed by which you do things? Is the federal government faster, slower than the state?
No, I found them to be similar. Things always take longer than they should.
And how about just in terms of communication? Often folks discover that the federal government is just so much larger that an effort to communicate is not walking down the hall and seeing your staff. It's a much broader constituency.
I think technology has changed that equation considerably. It even changes what I used to think was the difference between county and state and federal government. And I'll explain both. It used to be that if you were in county government, you ran into your constituent in the grocery store and the person talked to you about what was wrong. But then when you went to the state capitol or the federal capitol, it became very distant, a letter in the mail, if that. And so you were sort of more sheltered from the impact of your decision on a real family. I don't think that's true anymore. I get emails on my desktop from individual mothers and fathers who don't feel like they got justice from the child support system. And there are real conversations. I think that's also true about what you said about the time it takes to do things. Years ago, it might have taken longer to get, you know, a bill through Congress and things like that. But now, moment by moment, we're sending language back and forth and talking to legislative staffers and between fax machines and emails and cell phones. It's a very rapid pace. It's a much more rapid pace. It probably doesn't feel that way to a family who's waiting for a law to change before they can get relief. But the process of doing it, of making the change happen, can sometimes be very rapid.
How about in terms of just your management? Has your management style changed, or the different tools now being used at a different level?
I would say that the reasons my management style have changed don't have to do with being a Fed rather than a state government person, but with things you learn over the years. sometimes, for example, I had successes in my career by giving really colorful speeches or colorful statements to the press and getting people riled up to want the change that I was seeking. And I've learned over the years that that sometimes it's better to be less provocative. You know, instead of picking a fight and getting everybody all riled up, maybe you make an ally and find out how you have mutual interests. But I think that probably happens to most people in most careers. You learn how to make allies, and that fighting the good fight, while exciting, is not necessarily the way to get the result you want.
That's a good stopping point. We've got to go to a break. Rejoin us in a few minutes as we continue talking with Dr. Sherry Heller of HHS. How does one evade child support, and how are these folks caught? We'll ask Sherry to explain this to us when the Business of Government Hour returns.